is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Let me take a moment to let everyone know about the upcoming BTS Summit in St. Louis on September 27th and 28th. If you haven't heard, BTS is a comprehensive program for running a long-term, profitable, high-quality youth basketball training company. It allows someone to have a career in youth basketball, helping young people become the best they can be both on and off the court. I am honored to have Larry Hughes, 13-year NBA veteran and a co-founder of BTS, here to tell us what this summit is all about. Larry, tell us about the upcoming summit and what it's all about.
Mike, thanks and congratulations on your Hoop Heads podcast. We established the summit to provide people interested in building a successful youth basketball program the opportunity to come in for 2 days of learning what we do, how we do it, and how they can apply our system to grow their programs. In March, I opened up our 16,000 square foot facility with leading technology used by several NBA teams, which tracks every shot, every movement on the court, allowing us to objectively assess the progress of our members. People who join the summit will get a chance to use the technology and learn how we integrate it into our programs. We will have David Martin, recently head analytics of the 76ers, speak about direction of technology in basketball. We will also have presentations and workshops on how to effectively build back office systems to create memorable experiences for members and build long-term value in the business. We want to empower the attendees to take their basketball organizations to the next level. So the first 30 signups get to participate for free. Thereafter, it's $199 per person. We have arranged discounted hotels in the area. The event also offers the opportunity to network with others in similar circumstances. We're excited to provide this opportunity to market and think that all attendees will get extraordinary value for attending.
Larry, the summit sounds great. Where can people go to learn more and get signed up?
They can go to basketballtrainingsystems.com/summit to learn more or call us at 301-602-3001.
Thanks, Larry. I'm hoping to make it out to St. Louis myself.
Once you start, you're in for life. I mean, once you get a taste of it, you're going to be a Snow Valley person forever.
Dave Slawbaugh is currently the head men's basketball coach at Cornell College in Mount Vernon, Iowa, where he was appointed to lead the program in May of 2017, becoming the 17th head coach in the Rams' 109-year history. Slawbaugh was the lead assistant on Cornell's staff during the 2016-2017 season, helping guide the Rams to a third-place finish in the Midwest Conference and the program's first postseason berth since 2009-2010. Slawbaugh carries more than 30 years of coaching experience at the high school and collegiate levels in the Hawkeye State. He has been a lead instructor for Snow Valley Basketball School since 1999 and is actively involved with USA Basketball. A 1992 graduate of Morningside College, Slawbaugh had a successful 7-year stint as head boys basketball coach at Williamsburg High School from 2008 to 2015. He compiled an overall record of 106-60, which included a 24-3 mark during his final campaign when the Raiders placed fourth in the Class 3A state tournament. Slawbaugh was named 2015 Class 3A District Coach of the Year by the Iowa Basketball Coaches Association. Slawbaugh's coaching career began as boys assistant at Mid Prairie High School from 1984 to 1988, under legendary Hall of Fame coach Don Showalter. He then made stops as an assistant at Iowa Lakes Community College from 88 to 90, Morningside College from 90 to 96, and Mid Prairie from 2003 to 2008, before taking the head job at Williamsburg. Check out our website, www.hoopheadspod.com, where you can listen to every episode in our archive. After you've listened to this episode or one of your other favorites, please head over to your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Those reviews help others in the basketball community find our show. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoop Heads podcast so you never miss an episode. The pod is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, and YouTube. Make sure you're prepared to take down a bunch of notes as you listen to this episode with Coach Dave Slawbaugh from Cornell College in Mount Vernon, Iowa. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Heads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the podcast from Cornell College in Mount Vernon, Iowa, Coach Dave Slawbaugh. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Well, it's taken a while for me to get on this thing. I apologize. You've tried a bunch of times and I'm glad it finally worked out. And It's funny how when Snow Valley's going on, I have a tough time finding time to do much anything else, but I'm really pleased to be on it with you guys tonight.
Well, hey, you disappear into a dorm room and, you know, things just, you know, you're in a dorm room, you're in a gym and you're behind the computer and trying to figure everything out. And for anybody who's been there to Snow Valley, I guess I would equate it to the duck on the water. There's a lot of furious paddling going on underneath, but if you're there as a kid or as a coach, you guys do a great job of making it all run smoothly so that no one sees the hard work that you guys put in behind the scenes to make it what it is. And so, you know, again, this as our first experience of being there in Waverly for, you know, firsthand to be able to have a chance to coach, it was just tremendous. And as we've said to anybody we've had on, we say thanks to you and to Coach Showalter for the opportunity to come out and be a part of it. We were, you know, certainly honored to be able to be a part of it because I know that not everybody gets a chance to go out there and work it. And it lived up to every bit of the experience that we hoped it would be.
You guys are always welcome to come out and work it.
Awesome, man. I think we'll definitely plan. I don't know if we're going to keep up with Tony and be there for all 4 weeks, but we're definitely going to have pencil in a week on our schedule in perpetuity as long as you'll have us back. So as you said, we've been chasing you for a while, and we finally made it work tonight. And so we're very appreciative of you taking the time out of your schedule to jump on with this. Want to start by going back in time to when you were a young kid growing up in Iowa. Talk a little bit about your first experiences with the game of basketball, with athletics, and just what made you fall in love with basketball when you were a young kid.
Well, this would be kind of crazy. You know, you might not even believe it, but I grew up at Mid Prairie High School, and same place Coach Showalter graduated from, and he was on some really good teams when I was a little kid. They went to state. They had a really tremendous coach named Cal Hickman, and the teams were really good. And that, so I think that's where I got the first bug for it, was just following the Golden Hawks and getting a chance to do like the peewee basketball. They kind of had the original peewee basketball on Saturday mornings, and the players coached you. And I just remember that at a real early age, you know, going to the state tournament. Seems like it was just yesterday, though. It was a while, you know, it was quite a while ago, but I think that's probably how I got the first bug. And they were also really good at football, and just good role models. You know, as a young kid, you can look up to them, and that was a big deal to go to a Mid-Prairie football game on a Friday night or anytime they were playing basketball.
How important was it for you at that time, if you look back, that those kids who were part of high school teams, whether it be basketball or football, that you had a chance to interact with them, have them as your coach? I know that that was something that in my development as a player that I really loved in my community here in Strongsville, Ohio, when I grew up, that was the same way, where the kids who were playing on the varsity or the junior varsity team would come down and coach the elementary school kids. And I've said it on the podcast before, but I have friends that I made when I was a young kid and they were high school players and coached me that I'm still friends with today. And then conversely, I have kids who I coached when I got to the high school, and they were in elementary school, that I'm still friends with and I'm in contact with today. And I think it's just a unique situation that it still exists in some communities, but it doesn't exist everywhere nearly as much as it did back in the time when you and I were going to school. So can you talk a little bit about how much that had an influence on you as far as wanting to be a part of those programs as you grew up, seeing those kids who were already doing some of the things that maybe you dreamed about when you were younger?
You know, you think back to those days, and it didn't matter if it was one of the five starters or, you know, one of the, you know, I suppose they played about nine deep, and some of those teams, there could be the 15th, 16th guy on that team. And in my world, that guy was just as much a baller as anybody was. And, you know, I'm not even sure any of those guys could play at the end of the bench, you know, now looking back at it. But they were on the team, and they were on the team that we would go see on Friday nights. And you just had so much respect and awe of you know, them as role models. And just it was the time before the, you know, obviously way before the cell phones and cable TV that have 100 games on a week. So that was your fix. That was your athletic fix, was going to the local high school. Or when you got lucky enough that either your parents or your older brother, or I had friends, families would take me to Iowa football and basketball games. So that was like the big deal when I was a kid, was that's when I got to watch it. Or Big Ten basketball was only on Saturday afternoon on Channel 9 here in Iowa out of Cedar Rapids. So it was a really cool deal if the Hawkeyes were going to be on playing the Buckeyes or something. But then the next Saturday, it might be Wisconsin against Northwestern. But it was your only chance to see, in my mind, big-time basketball. And so I have strong memories of that.
Yeah, that's funny because I remember watching Ohio State games. And here in the Cleveland area, the games were shown on, and again, we're going back to, this is the late 70s, early 80s when I would be watching games. And it was on Channel 43, which was on the UHF, part of the dial. And you'd actually have to physically crank that dial. And I remember my parents had a 13-inch black and white TV in their bedroom. And for whatever reason, that was the TV that got the best reception for that particular channel. So anytime my dad and I wanted to watch an Ohio State basketball game, we would literally sit in my parents' bedroom watching Ohio State basketball on this 13-inch black and white TV. And you're right, Dave, that there just wasn't the access to basically any game that you want to watch today. I mean, we're getting to the point now where all these high schools are streaming their games, where you're going to be able to see pretty much any game anywhere at any level from high school and above. We're probably only a couple years away from every school in the country streaming their video. But back in those days, you didn't get all that. So you were stuck with what you could find, on the couple channels. Now Jason's giving me a strange look, so I'm not sure what.
Well,
he's
so I was going to, we've been talking about FIBA a little bit, and we won't get into that today, but the fact that we had to get ESPN Plus to watch it, I kept getting upset about that.
See, I have trouble. Jason's a lot younger than us, so he doesn't have an understanding of what it was like.
I have a narrower lens.
Back when there was four channels and watching a black and white TV, but I could definitely relate to what you're saying. Those games were big time.
But it doesn't really change though when you get older. I bought that $4.99 ESPN Plus package, and I've been getting up at 3 a.m. to watch certain teams play, and the U.S. team's been playing at 7:30. I guess this morning was a 6 a.m. game, so I haven't missed any of those, and I try to catch a couple games a night and on demand in the office, so I've been getting a good dose of the World Cup basketball.
Today was the only day I watched because it was the only day I had any access to it because it was on regular ESPN, and I got to work. I made sure I got to work early so I could watch it, and then I watched the first half, and I was like, I didn't feel good about it. So, I was glad at least that I got to watch a little bit of them playing.
When you're younger, you just kind of you get hooked on it, and people laugh at this. I would guess they would think this might be a little bit strange, but even when I was younger, guys, I really thought of myself wanting to be a coach more than I ever thought of myself being a college player or anything like that. I was big into baseball cards, football cards, basketball cards. And when I was a kid, man, that was I'd go down the basement and, I would make my teams out of the cards, and I'd make dice games to go along with it. And I just always felt I'd make my own playbooks. And I just always felt like I wanted to coach. But early on, I thought maybe I was going to be a football coach because I really love football too. And then a couple things kind of changed me a little bit later that flip me to the basketball side, which has been a good move for me. It's always a lot warmer in the gym than it is outside in the winter. And I think as basketball coaches have a little bit climate control a little bit easier. So
yeah, I think you did. As a sports parent, I can also vouch for that. You made a good decision too. You don't want to stand outside the soccer field or the football field or at the dusty baseball field when it's 97 degrees. I think basketball, you get the best of everything. You're in a nice gym, you get to watch a great game, and from a fan standpoint, or a parent standpoint, when at least you get to see your kid involved in the action. So I think you definitely made the right choice going forward. Do you still have all your cards, or did you get rid of your collection at some point?
I sold a bunch of them because I figured my oldest daughter had a wedding, and we had to make sure we had enough for all the expenses that go into a wedding. So I parted with it.
You must have had some good ones then.
I had old stuff, and I still have some stuff, and I like going back and looking at it. And I probably sold them 20 years too late, though. I think they used to be worth a lot more. I think the market kind of tanked on that, but yeah. But I just enjoyed that. And you know, kind of going back to that football deal, you know, this is, I just told one of my players this the other day, Brady Ragland is a kid from Tennessee, and we were just sitting in the gym. He came through and we just started talking a little bit, and I told him that I actually went to Cornell College out of high school and played football. You know, I was JV all the way. I wasn't going to get on the varsity, but I was there. And, you know, we've talked about the one course at a time at Cornell where you take that one class for 3.5 weeks. That's all you take. And then when that block's over with on a Wednesday, take your final, and you've got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, and you start block two. But I flunked my first block at Cornell years ago. My players would get a kick out of this, but the class was really hard, and I wasn't used to that pace. You know, like you have to have a book read in 3 days, and, you know, you do it all in 3.5 weeks. And so the wide receiver coach was a guy named Paul Maskey, and he was he's still the career win leader at Cornell for men's basketball. Tremendous person, great coach. And he told me, he was wide receiver coach, he said, we got to have to get your GPA up. So he put me in a intro to coaching basketball class, second block. And that's where I got the hook. That's where I flipped from football to basketball. I just got a real interest listening to Coach Maskey and going through his 3.5 week class. And that kind of pulled me in the right direction.
All in the desire to improve your GPA. Nice. Yes, nice. I like it.
That zero needed to come up a little bit.
That's a long way up for that GPA to go from a zero up to a 4.0. That's tough.
Oh, so it was, but that is kind of what I did. That's kind of how I got it. But you know, the early stuff is it's fun to think back, and it's I really like your podcast. You know, just hearing some of the stories. You know, you just mentioned Tony Sterling a second ago, and I listened to that one today again. I've listened to parts of it, then I listened to the whole thing today driving to work. I get a 50-minute commute every day. And Jets Tony just talking about dribbling on grass, you know, and dirt, you know, and just the love of the game. And, you know, that's a special thing about basketball. I tell you, it's the people that are in it for the right reason, just they get it because they love it, and it can take you places. And that whole story that Tony had was pretty cool.
Yeah, I agree. It's one of the things that I think, you know, the current youth sports scenario is not quite the same. And I think it's one of the, to me, I always say it's a tough thing for me to watch. I sometimes feel bad for my own kids or players that I have a chance to coach, because they just don't have the same opportunities to play in the environments that I played in. And not that the environments that kids get to play in today, I think there's some tremendous benefits to that. They're exposed to, in a lot of cases, a lot better coaching. They also have access to gyms that I never would have had access to, but you miss out on some of those things, like you said, with what Tony experienced, where, you know, he's out playing on a dirt court. Or I know for me, I spent a ton of time as a young kid in middle school and high school, and then on into college, playing just at local courts or driving to try to find a gym and playing against people of different ages from all different kinds of backgrounds. And I think that's something that, you know, kids miss out on today. And those stories like Tony told, or like I can go back and just, you know, relay the old war stories when I see people that I used to play pickup basketball with. And I think those stories are missing. Now, they've been replaced with stories of AAU and travel teams and the opportunity to go and play against high level competition in your own age group and that kind of thing. But it's just interesting how basketball has shifted, just the way that we bring players along today compared to how we used to.
Oh, I think it's, you know, there was really nothing better in the summer than to get an outdoor court. You know, all the elementaries had baskets, and that's a good thing about growing up at Mid Prairie. All of our middle schools, everything had good courts. And summer night where, you know, it would be 90 out still, and you just get a good sweat in, you had fun, and that's kind of where you hung out all night. And I drive by a lot of courts now, and I don't see a lot of people out on them. But like you said, everybody has an opportunity. The gyms are open a lot more. It was hard to get in the gyms when we were kids. They were locked down quite a bit. But I wish kids would get out and play a little bit more and just do a little bit more 3-on-3, 2-on-2, 1-on-1. Just be creative on how you're going to make your games. And I think that's a good way to grow your game.
Yeah, I really attribute a lot of the success that I was able to have as a player to that opportunity to just go out and play and be part of pickup games, be part of just, as you said, hanging out. And I think that's something that, you know, kids miss today. It's just, you know, when they're sitting in a hallway at a tournament, it's just not the same as being outdoors and hanging out with people all different ages and they're, like I said, different backgrounds. And I miss the playoff, you know, the pickup basketball culture. I think it's something that I'm really sad to see having gone away, because I really feel like it was a huge part of my development. Yet at the same time, like I said, I understand the benefits of the current system. And I think that, you know, you look at players overall today, and I think for the most part, they're probably more skilled than players in the past, but I don't know that they're necessarily better players with higher basketball IQ just because they don't play in the same way. There's nothing like playing pickup basketball for 2, 3, 4 hours in a night and then just going home and being exhausted. It's one of the things I probably miss more than anything about playing is those nights where I'd play on the asphalt for 3 hours and then just come home and, you know, slug down a gallon of Gatorade and just lay on my couch exhausted. I miss those days.
The AAU stuff, it's a necessary evil. I mean, we use it to evaluate kids, and it does get kids better. But I mean, there's no pressure in AAU. You lose on a Friday night, and you lose on a Saturday. Next thing, you're in a certain platinum bracket to the silver bracket to the gold bracket. There's a lot of brackets, and you play, and then the next week you get to go do it again. Now, real pressure is going on an outdoor court that's really competitive with about 25 guys. You lose, you might sit for 3 games. There's what pressure is. I mean, you had to find a way to win, or you're going to sit. And or if you didn't play hard, nobody's going to pick you. And so I think just those things where it was run by there was always somebody running it. There was always some guys who were running it, and you had to be in favor with them. Now, heck, you just get to go play 5 more games the next weekend. And so I think they lose out on some of the competitive spirit of having to kind of tough it out and make sure your team won so you could keep playing.
Yeah, that's completely the truth. I love what you just said there about how there was always somebody that was kind of in charge or would sort of run the court. And even when they weren't playing, you knew where they were. You could always hear them walking up and down the sideline and making sure that the next team had 5 and making sure that they were part of that 5. There's no doubt that every court, no matter where you go, where you went in America in between 1978 and 1990, that there was somebody in charge. There was definitely somebody in charge of a court. And I think the other thing that you find out really fast is, you know, one of the things that the AAU system, I think, does is it inflates everybody's opinion of themselves between social media and just the way that the system is set up. And, you know, when you're on the playground, there's a hierarchy, and the hierarchy is, if you're not good, guess what? Nobody picks you up for their team for the next game. And so you find out real quick that, hey, if I'm not getting picked up, I got to get better. And I know when I was young, I used to be the first guy to the courts every day so that, you know, hey, the young kid, we got 9 guys. We'll let the young kid play in the first game. And maybe if I could get on a good team, I'd get a couple games in before I had to go and sit down, you know, where nobody had picked the skinny 13-year-old to be on their team. And it's just interesting how different things are today.
Oh, absolutely.
So talk a little bit about, as long as we're here with the AAU stuff, talk about the challenges of trying to evaluate just all this sea of kids when you go to an AAU tournament. Talk a little bit about your process of how you maybe narrow things down. And obviously, because of Cornell's academics, that narrows the field of prospects that you can consider right off the bat. But just talk a little bit about your process of recruiting, how you go about sort of narrowing the field of kids that you're going to consider. And then when you go watch a tournament, just talk a little bit about some of the things maybe that you're looking for that fit with the type of culture that you have at Cornell and the kind of kids that you want to bring in.
You got to work really hard. You got to be able to sort quick, and you got to be able to pay attention, I guess, when you get to event, because there's a lot going on. It's pretty easy to sit and talk to the next coach beside you. So you got to find your own little area. You just got to I think you got to have a little bit of a game plan before you get to one of the events. And then I think it's just you read a lot of things, not only what you see, you know, how they're competing. You know, you probably that's the first thing you want to make sure that they do know how to compete. Then you just got to kind of see if you can fit them into a certain style of play that you like. Now, you know, it's kind of different on the D3 level where, you know, the big guys, you know, the D1s, the blue bloods, you know, they know that they want a certain stretch four, and that's certain stretch four needs to be 6'8", 6'10", whatever it might be. And they might recruit 10 of them, and they like the first one better and they like the 10th one, but the 10th one's still pretty good. And the 10th one still fits into that system. I might be out looking, or we might be out looking in for a four man, and one might be 6'3", one might be 6'8", one might be chunky, one might be skinny, you know. So you can't be so married to just having a system that we're not so much plug and play into a system. We're trying to build a system around quality kids that we think are just can come in and compete and shoot it. You know, I think shooting's a big deal at our level. I think most Division III schools all shoot it pretty well. So you just got to kind of go in with a little different mindset. But I think the first thing I would look at is how competitive for kids. And, you know, we talk all the time, especially, you know, you guys have been to Snow Valley now. If we could just run cutthroat, if I could just go in, if there's 200 kids at an AAU tournament, we could just shut it down for a little bit, divide them up by T-shirt colors and play cutthroat for about 3 hours. You know, you could get all you need. You could get everything evaluated that you would need, because there's where you find out who can play and who can compete. And sometimes in an AAU tournament, it's really hard because a lot of these teams don't put their kids in a very good position to show how competitive they can be, or maybe how smart they can play, because the games can be kind of ragged on times.
Yeah, I think I've made this argument on the podcast before, but I could make a very, very good argument that you shouldn't even play any full court games up through 6th, 7th, even 8th grade. If we just said, okay, we're only going to play half court 3-on-3 from, you know, whatever, 2nd grade through 7th, let's just say, I think the overall skill development of kids would be a lot higher, because, you know, to your point, a lot of times you see these AAU games and they're so ragged and guys are running up and down the floor, and it's hard to figure out who's good, who's not, who has a skill set, because again, this kid's got the ball in his hands all the time, and another kid's just running up and down the lane and never seeing the ball, and so it's hard to evaluate what they can do. And it's just, and then you have such a wide variety of club quality and coach quality, and so you don't know, is it the program or the team or the coach that the kid's in, or is it the kid themselves? I'm sure as a coach it's got to be extremely difficult to kind of sort through all that and figure it out. And then, as you mentioned, I guess the number one thing that I know, we talked to TJ Rosine from Emmanuel and PGC basketball. He talked about how, you know, he goes in a gym and there's, you know, whatever, there's 20 kids that are there competing. He goes, I can eliminate 12 of them right off the bat because they just don't play hard enough. And I think that, you know, it sounds like from what you're saying that that's one of the key things. I think if a kid's not going to play hard, the rest of what they do is, you know, almost irrelevant.
I think you're 100% on, spot on with that. And, you know, some AAU is really good. There's some programs do a great job. They're tremendous coaches that get the kids doing it the right way. We tend to gravitate towards those programs to evaluate kids. It's a lot easier for me to go into Chicago. They'll have some showcases. Mercury Elite's a really nice program in there. And they might have, 50, 60 kids come in for like an open house. But there'll be 60 schools in there watching them. But then you can see them work out a little bit. You can talk to them when it's over with. And so I think you got to be creative, because we're not, you know, I don't think we're going to have the same sort of recruiting budget as even Division II would have. And so you just can't go chase it and spend money and not get a lot accomplished. So I think you just got to be smarter. You know, I think one thing that's helped me over the years is just with Snow Valley, I'm in charge of, you know, I've got a lot of input from a lot of coaches every summer. It might be a couple hundred coaches. So through that, I've been able to develop some really good relationships, and I get probably half the kids I sign usually come out of just a really good, solid connection over the years from Snow Valley coaches. And then you're automatically welcome in their gym, and it just speeds the process up a little bit. So
yeah. So how much stock do you put in? Let's say it's a coach that, you know, obviously if it's somebody that you have a relationship with, whether it's through Snow Valley or something else, how much time do you spend talking to a potential recruit's high school coach, somebody at their school, a family member? How much time do you spend doing that level of investigation, let's say, and then how much stock do you put in those conversations that you have if you do spend time with that?
Well, I feel really bad about this, and I think I hope that we do a decent job with this, but I know we fall short sometimes. I wish I had the opportunity or could find more time to spend with the high school coaches of the specific kids. You try like crazy to keep them super involved. A lot of times their schedule's super busy as well. And so you really want them to be a part of it. And I wish there was times I could even have them be more involved with it. But sometimes I feel like we fall short, and that's not just me. I think that's across the board. So I wish I had more time with the high school coaches for sure. As far as the families go, we do a great job of really recruiting the families as well. We don't recruit a ton of kids at any one time, but the ones we're on, we recruit really hard, and a big part of it's getting to know the family. And I mean to get to know them really well, that I'm a father that sent kids to college, and I think as parents, you want to have a comfort level that where they're sending their son is going to be a good situation. You know, the guys, the coaches are going to take good care of their young man while they're away. And so we spend a lot of time with the families, and I think that's a great way to recruit, because then you have some really, really good relationships during the 4 years that the young man's playing for you as well.
Head Start Basketball's fall skill development clinics will be held at the Strongsville Rec Center on 4 consecutive Saturdays in October. These skill clinics will be from 4 to 6 p.m. beginning on October 5th. The skills clinics are for boys and girls in grades 1 through 8. If you're looking for a great way to get prepared for your season, sign up for the Head Start Basketball Fall Skill Development Clinics at www.headstartbasketball.com.
So when you're spending time with families, describe what that looks like specifically. Like, is that you're going and having dinner with them? That's you're inviting them on campus multiple times? Talk about what exactly when you say we're going to spend time with a recruit's family. Just give us a specific idea of what that means.
We won't bring a ton of guys on campus for visits, but when we do, we plan it out really well that the first thing we want to get the player with our guys. We think that's the most important thing, that, you know, the relationships, because those are going to be your teammates. You're going to be the people you spend more time with in college than they, more often than not, they turn out to be your best friends or some of the best friends you're going to have for the rest of your life. So once a family gets on campus, we want the kids to be with our players as much as possible. And in turn, then we just don't let the parents kind of sit around while their son's eating lunch with the team and all that. So we spend a ton of time on an official visit with the family. So if the kid's with our players, we're with the family. And if it starts at 9 and goes till 6 or 7 in the evening, we're with them almost the whole time. And so we spend a ton of time with the parents and the kids. And you know what? You can find out a lot about the recruit. You can find out more often than not, if you got good feelings about them from your earlier visits, you find out where they get it from. That usually means they're coming from a great family, and just get some validation to pursue it even harder and try to get one of those kids to become part of your program.
So how many kids are you targeting in a particular recruiting class where you're really going to go after those kids hard? How many kids do you get down to that you're like, okay, these are the 10, the 5, the 15 that we really want to focus on? What number generally is that, or does it vary from year to year?
Varies a little bit year to year, because then all of a sudden you might have, like last year we had a big class. We brought 11 kids in, 9 freshmen and 2 transfers. And I think we had 15 or 16 kids maybe total on campus for visits, maybe not even that. So we've really recruited about 20 kids pretty hard, and that jumped down into more like 15. And then we had a pretty good year of getting the kids that we were after, I guess. And you always lose some really good ones, but you always get a late one that you weren't, you know, you got in on late too. And so it's kind of a balancing act. But I guess we've always been this way. We just try to make it real personal and maybe spend a little bit more time with the kid. Again, because I just don't think we're in a situation where it's really easy for us to bring 50 kids in on campus. You know, I don't think that'll work for us. And so we try to do smaller, but probably more quality with trying to build the relationships.
All right. So 2 questions. 1, what's your biggest challenge in terms of recruiting kids to come to Cornell? And then what is your biggest selling point that you try to sell kids on? Maybe 1 or 2 things that you're like, hey, if you come to our program, here's what's going to be the benefit to you. So what's maybe 1 challenge that you face? And then what are some of the unique benefits that you're selling when you go out to try to recruit a kid to come to Cornell?
Well, first, I think you've got to find those kids that you think it's a good fit for you. And it seems like you always start out on the basketball side, but then at some point you've got to probably flip it to the academics just to see if they'd be an academic fit at Cornell. And but once you kind of identify that maybe it would be a potential fit both ways, then you just got to get them in. And I think what sells our program probably as much more than anything is our guys. You know, we're just, I feel like I got a bunch of good guys in my roster that are excellent recruiters. I mean, they do a good job getting to know the guys and staying in touch with them. And so I think that's a huge deal. Let's just get them around our guys. Cornell's really unique. It's tucked in, we're about 30 minutes north of the University of Iowa, you know, Iowa City, and we're about 10, 12, 15 minutes from Cedar Rapids. So we're kind of tucked right in a pretty nice area. And about 80% of our kids on our campus are from out of state or international. So that's kind of the flavor of our roster too. So we've got, you know, I think it's appealing for if we're recruiting a kid from, if we're recruiting a kid from California, there's a lot of California kids on campus. Or if we're, you know, we're looking at kids from Indiana, there's going to be kids from Indiana on campus. Get a lot of Chicagoland kids. So I think it's just getting them on campus and making the fit, and then hopefully the academic thing will excite them enough to consider Cornell, with our one course at a time being a little bit different than other semester systems.
So when you first took the job in 2017 and you looked at what you wanted the program to become, what were the first couple things that you looked at and you said, this is what we have to get going if we want the program to reach the level, the standard that you hope to have it at? What were some of the first things that you did when you walked through the door back in 2017?
You know, I think we just work really hard on trying to, you know, everybody's going to talk culture. Everybody's going to talk that, you know, but I think it is important. I think you just got to work really hard. And we, you know, I inherited, you know, when I took the job and the roster that was there was great kids that worked really hard. And we had decent amount of success. We weren't probably as deep. I think we got a few more kids now. Our roster is going to be closer to 20 instead of maybe 15 or 16, maybe 22 kids. So, you know, you just have to work really hard. And I'm very appreciative of some of the older kids that I took, that I got to coach, you know, their last. And that's not easy. And you got to give those guys a lot of credit to finish off with a coach that didn't bring them in, you know, on the front end. And everybody I've dealt with has really handled that very well, and they've been good for the program. But then I think you have to start the lifeblood is just keep bringing good basketball players in, and we're just trying to find guys that really love to be in the gym and just really love to. With Division III and the rules, you know, we can't do the skill work in the fall or in the spring. So they've got to be able to do it themselves. They got to be self-motivated. So you really work hard on finding gym rats, and we're trying to find guys that can shoot too. And I think that's what everybody's out looking for, but we're putting a big premium on trying to find some perimeter shooters.
So if you think about the gym rat piece of it, what's the best way that you found in your experience to be able to identify those kids who are going to come to school and they're going to continue to put time in the off season? Because as you said, obviously at the Division III level, you're not allowed to work with your kids on a skill development standpoint during the off season. So you're relying on those kids to be self-starters, to be self-disciplined, to be gym rats and get out there and work. So what have you found that's worked for you in terms of being able to identify those kids who are going to be the type of kids who are going to come in and they're going to really improve from their freshman year over the course of those 4 years until their senior year by putting the time in outside of the season? How do you go about identifying kids that are going to have those traits that are going to enable them to really improve over the course of their 4 years?
Well, I think you really got to lean on the coaches that have worked well with them in the past. And that isn't just the high school coaches. It's their trainers. It's funny, they all have trainers now. And you know, it's their AAU guys. And so you got to get a little bit of a background. And then I think you just got to go by instinct and gut a little bit. And that's why more time you can spend with the kid and the family, it seems like the kids are very serious in the classroom, or their, you know, academics are important to them. More often than not, that means that they take pride in a lot of things they do, and that should translate into some skill work as well. And then you just got to find some leaders. You know, you can't really pick them. They've just got to, you know, you can't handpick leaders. They've just got to show that they have it, and it just kind of happens naturally. And it's not so much titles as it's just the actions that you do. And we've been fortunate enough to have some guys that do a good job of bringing people with them in the gym. And we really preach that too, that if you're coming in to shoot, grab your neighbor, grab your buddy, you know, get another teammate with you, you know, come in pairs, come in four guys, you know, play some 3-on-3. And we've been pretty fortunate that's the type of kid that we've had in the program and that we have right now.
Yeah, I think it makes a big difference when I think what I hear you saying is that your program has been and continues to be a program that has it's a player led team. So obviously as a coach, you know, you have the ultimate responsibility of leading, but it comes down to if your team's going to get to that next level, to that elite level, it really has to come from the kids enforcing the standards, the culture, the pillars, however you want to put it, on their own, where they're telling other people in the program, or they're telling the new guys that are coming in, hey, the way we do things here is this, and here's why we do it, and here's how we do it. And I think that most successful programs, and I'm betting that you would probably agree, that you have those kinds of kids that are, for lack of a better term, policing each other to make sure that the culture and the standards of the program are being upheld. Is that what you're seeing with your team right now?
Absolutely. And it's something that you get to be successful. And, you know, we've got a long ways to go too. I mean, we're building, and we know we got to get better, and we know we got to work hard to get there. But it isn't for lack of work right now. I mean, our guys have been awesome in the weight room, and they're just doing what they need to do, and that's fun to watch. The thing that kind of is hard about Division III, it's like you know that October date, first day can't come quick enough. You just want to get going, and so you got to have some patience, and you talk to your friends that are D1 and D2 coaches. They've got their workouts going, and it's like they never stop. And, you know, we laugh about that sometimes. Steve Forbes down at East Tennessee State's one of my good coaching friends, and they stay at it pretty hard, you know, all year. And it's, you know, when he talks to us, like, okay, when's the first time you play? Well, we're going up to Augie and Sioux Falls for an exhibition game on the 27th of October, and we start the 16th. He's going to have quite a bit more in than us at that point. And so some of my friends that they don't understand the D3 model, they either shake their head or laugh. You know what? They're really there to be student athletes. And you know, why not let them have the fall to get their feet wet, the young guys in the classroom, and we'll get them caught up the best we can. And everybody else is in the same boat that we're playing. So, you know, it's kind of a level playing field. But it's a challenge. You've got to coach it probably a little bit different than maybe some of the other levels have to, for sure.
So talk a little bit about what you're doing in this time of the fall as you're heading towards the season where, yeah, you can't be on the floor working skill development with your guys, but obviously you're not sitting around on your hands there. You got a lot of things going on. So talk to us about what it is that you as a Division III head coach are doing in this September, October time before practice starts to make sure that you're ready for the season once it gets here. What are some of the things that you're doing, whether it's administratively, preparing X's and O's, getting things together? Talk about what you're doing day to day right now to get prepared for your season.
Well, we're working really hard. My assistants, Nick Bob, John Payne, my son Zach is going to be a first year coach with us this year. I've got another guy, Steve Otteson, and Ryan Lee. So we're trying to spend as much time as we can together. And I've got a huge checklist, and we really need to keep working on that because it's kind of a project. But we're just trying to look at every little thing, whether it be the food we eat on the road to what time we're going to try to lift with the practices. Anything that, you know, travel gear, whatever it might be, even a little thing, we're trying to look at everything we can just to make sure that we've got the best game plan for even minor things. So it's kind of like a deep dive into the nuts and bolts of everything that's going to start happening here in October. So I feel pretty good that we'll have a decent jump start to that. And, you know, we change things so much because we don't have, we're not going to know exactly how these young kids are going to fit into a certain style. So we have to have some things kind of ready to go. But then I think you also have to be flexible on the X and O side that, you know, you might have great plans and then all of a sudden you start practice. You go, God, none of these young guys fit into that. And so you've got to be able to kind of adapt a system to fit the talent. And you may not really know what that's going to be like until you start. And so that's kind of different. We just can't say that, yeah, this is what we do every year. I just don't think that would work for us because I don't think we can always recruit exactly into a system. So we're doing a ton of that right now. And then Snow Valley never ends either. And so, I mean, I've been up to Wartburg at least a couple times, and Coach Showalter is going to be back here pretty soon. He still has a place here in Iowa. So we need to spend some time yet before October. It might be middle of October till he and I can sit down and work on some things for next year. But that's kind of a big animal too, that never really goes away either, that you're always kind of working on that. And then just trying to get to know the guys. I think that's a super important deal to just get to know the guys, make sure the class is going good for them. Living in dorms is going good for them. You know, you'd imagine you're going to have a little bit of homesickness. And so you just want to make sure that they know they can come down and see you. So it's always the campus is always, they're always really pretty in the summer, but they come to life in the fall. You know, there's nothing like the move-in day. It's like Christmas for us. And so just having those guys back on campus, and not just my guys, you know, seeing the football kids or the baseball kids in the gym too, and down in the weight room, it makes the fall a lot more exciting for us as coaches.
Absolutely. Are you checking in with all your guys on a daily, you know, every couple of days? What's your contact like with your kids during this time of the year? How often are you seeing them? How are you checking in with them to make sure everything's going well? What does that process look like?
You probably see your guys, some of them maybe a little bit more often, but you would hope to see everybody. Now we do lift 3 days a week. And so my assistants, Coach Payne and Bob, run that. And so they're seeing them, you know, every other day. And I try to get down there. It's early morning stuff. And so I try to get, pop in there a little bit. Part of it, I kind of like the weight room to be kind of a, kind of just an area where the assistant coaches get to kind of grow a little bit with the guys. And I think it's a great way for them to build relationships where, you know, the old coach doesn't always need to be in there for that. I mean, my taste of music might be a little bit different. So maybe they want to keep me with that. But I'm hoping that I at least see my guys 2-3 times a week at least. And some of them a little more. You get creative, you know, where you can go up to the commons over the lunch hour, because with our one course at a time, the classes end at 11. They don't start again until 1. So all of our guys eat together every day. So I can pop in there and see them all over the lunch hour, which is definitely fun.
As you said earlier, when you were talking about, you know, these are guys that you're going to spend proportionally way more time with them than anybody else on the campus. And more than likely, those are going to be your guys that are going to be your friends when you're 65, 70 years old. They're still going to be the guys that, you know, you look back on those memories fondly. And so the fact that you're already starting to build that, you know, and let's say it's a freshman's first year and now they're already spending time eating with their classmates, eating with their teammates, you know, every single day, and starting to build those kinds of bonds, which obviously makes your team better when your team is bonded and they're together. It makes it easier to build a more cohesive unit. So as you look at this season specifically, what do you think is going to be the biggest challenge for you in this coming season?
Well, we were super young last year, and we're going to be pretty young again this year. We played 6 freshmen a lot last year, and they were in our top 10 more often than not. And so I thought we did some really good things a year ago with the young crew. We were really pretty good on the offensive end, and we were not very good on the defensive end. And I think probably a lot of things contributed to that, but I think just being young was probably one of the big parts of that. So we need to take just a huge step up on the defensive end this year, and that'll be a focus. Offensively, we play we try to play pretty fast. We set a school record last year for made threes, and so I would think that we'll continue to play that way. We're big into spacing. We try to really spread the floor out and, you know, try to create some mismatches or a little bit of advantage with longer closeouts, or, you know, try to track some defenders on the ball and get some kick out for some good looks. So we play a lot like what a lot of people are doing right now. A lot of 5-out stuff, a lot of 4-out stuff. Don't run a ton of sets. Didn't feel like a year ago with as young as we were that you could really do it. We had so many other fires we had to put out with kids that age. So we might add a little bit more to that, but we like to be a little positionless and just kind of, you know, play pretty quick and, you know, not just bog it down with a bunch of set calls. So I would think that we'll continue to, we do a lot of pistol action, some stuff like that in transition, and some of that two-sided break. You know, we try to get it pushed up as quick as we can, and we're not afraid to take a quick shot if we get a good one.
As you get into your season, I want to ask you about two things. As with the high academics there with Cornell, can you talk a little bit about your travel situation? I know that's a question that sometimes people have, and they maybe don't understand how, you know, the travel affects your team and your kids and their academics. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is more related to you and what you do during the season. How much time then do you spend watching film? So first, talk a little bit about your travel, and then two, talk about the amount of time that you and your assistants are breaking down film during the season.
Well, the travel part of it, we are pretty fortunate. The Midwest Conference is a real academic conference, and they understand the challenges. And I think specifically to us with the block system, it's really tough for us to have kids gone very long. Because if the class only goes 3.5 weeks, and so you miss a day, it's like missing a normal week. So we don't miss very much, and we can't miss over a day per block. And so it seems like our longer trips are on Saturdays. Our shorter trips are on Wednesdays. And the league's been good about that for us. And so the travel's tough, but there's a lot of nights you're getting back. The kids are going to get back at 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're expected to be at a 9 o'clock class. Our class sizes aren't very big. And if you're, You know, if you're not at class the day after the game, I mean, everybody knows about it. The professor's, he or she's going to probably call you and see where you're at. And we're fortunate. We just don't have guys that miss class. It just wouldn't work at Cornell. But travel's tough on kids. And I think baseball teams, some of these spring sports that travel even a little bit more, play more games. It's really tough on them. And I'm always impressed with how they can handle it. With some of the sports and play more games. But I think on the basketball side, I think we've got a pretty decent balance with it.
Yeah, I think that travel is one of the things that when you are a high school basketball player, you know, you don't necessarily realize the challenges of what traveling as a college basketball player, the demands that puts on you, especially as a freshman when you're first starting to adjust to the academic load, you're adjusting to the greater demands from you as a basketball player. And then you throw in the travel and making sure that you're getting to an early morning class after getting home late at night after a weeknight game. I think that's something that a lot of high school players and parents, as they're going into this, they don't necessarily think about those things as they head into their freshman year experience. So I think that I'm sure you find that it takes kids a little bit of time to adjust to that travel. And I was just curious to see how that, you know, fit in for you guys. And then the second part, or the second question that I had was just about your film and how much time you spend watching film, whether it's of your opponent for an upcoming game or reviewing, you know, each of your game films. How much time do you personally spend watching film once the season kicks off?
We spend a ton of time on it, and the assistants and myself, assistants really got to dig into the scouts. They probably do more on the front end than what I do. I back in the day when I was assistant, I had to do that. But so they get a lot of that front end work done on that, and then I jump in on it. But Synergy is a great tool. I mean, it's amazing, and it just speeds up the process of getting the information you need. There's a lot of, you know, on the analytic sides, there's a lot of ways to sort things. And so we're full bore into that. Probably not different than other schools, but we film everything, especially probably the first couple months of practice. And so we grade practice out every morning, you know, so we practice the night before. We're going to spend at least an hour, maybe a little bit, an hour and a half grading out the practice from the night before. And we chart everything, and whether it be our offense, our defense, and that gives us a good indicator, gives us hard numbers. And then you're not just going to make decisions on what you think your eyes have seen at practice when maybe there's other things going on, or my assistants might focus, you know, on a specific thing. You know, I've got different things I want them to keep their eyes on at any one practice, where I might be more of an overview of everything. But to get the assistants and myself to sit down the next morning and really slow it down and chart everything is probably where we put our most time on the video. And we're always, this time of year, we're always watching a ton of video just to see if we can steal some ideas, validate what we do. You know, I'm always exploring new things. I think that's the one thing as a coach. And I think probably my biggest job is, and it's not just my family of assistants that I have, it's that extended family that I have every summer with 200 and some coaches in Snow Valley, that I just really try to help young coaches, and it's coaches from all over. And so a lot of what I do in the fall and even in the season is just staying in contact with a lot of different people and trying to help them or ask them for help. But that can kind of keep you kind of busy too, because we do have such a great group of coaches at Snow Valley. And I think that's kind of something that you take pride in, that what can you do to help those guys? And in turn, you spend a lot of time talking to those guys throughout the whole year, which is super fun, but it also takes some time. But I think that's part of why you better, if you're in a position where you can help some other people, you better be willing to pay it forward a little bit. And I think that's something that Coach Showalter's always taught us, and you try to live by that for sure.
Yeah, I think that relationship piece is key. And I want to jump to that in just a second. I want to go backwards for just one more question about what you said. And you talked about charting, you know, you go through and look at the film and chart everything in practice. Is there anything unorthodox or maybe different or something that's really important to you that maybe, you know, another coach could pick up on and you say, hey, boy, it's really important that we track this, or this is a metric that we like to really look at. Is there something that maybe jumps out at you like that, that's maybe a little bit unusual that you keep track of that maybe other coaches might not put as much emphasis on?
I don't know if it would be what other people wouldn't look at, but I think the important things that we look at is I make my assistants don't always like it, and I'm on their butts about it a little bit, but they got to be good officials during practice too. I hate fouling. I just hate fouling people, and I don't want the other team to shoot free throws. And if you can't police it at practice, then you're going to get what you accept, and it's just going to roll right into the games. So we really work hard on not to foul in practice. And I think you got to find guys that, you know, rebounding drills, I don't know, man, if any of them ever really work. Who goes and gets rebounds in practice? You find out a lot about people. You might have a guy that might go a week and have two rebounds. And, you know, it's hard to play somebody like that, even if you're guard, you know. So I think rebounding in practice is a big deal. And just quality of shots, we don't put up for, you know, our patient level is pretty short on guys taking tough shots. We really preach that one more pass. Let's get a great shot. And if you space the floor, you should be able, if you got guys can attack a little bit, you shouldn't have to settle for a tough three. You shouldn't have to settle for a contested shot. I mean, you should be able to get the ball moving to get the type of shots that you're looking for. And so we would really chart the quality of shots, shooting percentages. And, you know, we want guys that don't throw it all over the gym too. So, you know, obviously track assists. We do some stuff that we try to get a better feel. It's not always easy to do, but you do the best you can. Try to get combinations like which group of guys played together the best. And sometimes you might have two really good players, but when you put them with a couple other guys, it just doesn't work. But they might be better with these two guys. And so it kind of gives you a blueprint of how you might want to substitute once the real game starts. So we try to get some efficiencies based on the groupings within a practice. So I think maybe that takes a little time to do, but I think that's pretty important.
And how has that changed, Dave, over the course of the time that you've been coaching, in terms of obviously synergy and all the things that we have today in terms of film breakdown makes it way easier to be able to do that. So has that allowed you over time to become more sophisticated? If you think back to when you were an assistant at the college level earlier in your career, and you think about how you used film and how you would break it down and what you would do, is it because of the advances in the technology, is it enabled you to go into much greater depth than you would in the past? Or would you still go into the greater depth and it just took a lot longer to do it?
No, I don't think you could get as deep into it as you can now. I think it's just a lot more convenient. It's just more tools to, and I think analytics is more of a real topic now than it probably would have been even 5, 10 years ago, for sure, 10 years ago. And so I just think you got to use it to your advantage because everybody else is. And sometimes, you feel like because you've coached a long time that your gut tells you a pretty good story. But sometimes when you break it down and you really start seeing what some of your groupings are, what you think might be your most effective late game lineup might not be, you know, or, you know, your best rebounding lineup might not be your five tallest guys, or, you know, what you think is your best crew. So I think you got to get some real numbers just to help you decide on how you're going to play people and, you know, how deep you want to go. And I think that's much easier to get to solid numbers now than it would have been before. I mean, the old days of breaking that film down was just so cumbersome that, you know, synergy just makes it just so much easier.
You don't miss the days of the VHS tapes and hitting that rewind button and missing it by 30 seconds and then watching the same play like 7 times in a row. You don't miss those days?
No, I thought it was pretty cool when they had those VCRs that you could set that second tape in there and you could actually just dub it right across in the same machine. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It's a totally different experience today than it used to be. I remember how painful it was back in the day to try to be able to watch film, break it down, do anything with it. It was brutal.
I just plug my iPad in and go now.
The worst technology Jason ever had was probably on a DVR.
Hold on a second. I'm not that young. No, come on. No, I remember I actually taught in a school my first 2 years teaching that for most of the year, the 1 year, I didn't have anything but a overhead projector. I had a teacher's on overhead.
That's funny because my father taught exercise physiology and kinesiology at Cleveland State, and I can still remember as a kid, he would have all of his
notes
overhead transparencies, and he would have them in manila folders. And so every year he'd pull out, he'd be teaching whatever class, and he'd pull out this, this giant manila folder of all these, handwritten transparencies. And you think about that now compared to what we have, and it's amazing the way that technology has transformed our ability to be efficient. And then the second thing that it's done, which leads into what you were just talking about a second ago, is the relationships that we're able to build and the number of ways that we can stay connected to people. And I think for the coaching profession, it's been just an incredible, incredible boost to coaches to be able to connect in ways that we never could have before. And it's made it, as you said, because of all the great people that you've had at Snow Valley, and you can stay in contact with them. It's so much easier to do that. So let's transition from your quote real job, let's transition to your second career working at Snow Valley. And so explain to us, first of all, how you came to be associated with Snow Valley. And obviously you've had a longstanding relationship with Coach Showalter going back to your hometown. But just talk about how you came to be a part of Snow Valley, and then we'll slowly work our way up to the role that you're playing there right now.
Well, it's just, my first real coaching job was when I was, 21, 22 years old, was Coach Showalter had me, took me on his staff as his assistant coach. And he had just moved back to Mid Prairie. He had coached at Lone Tree and Central El Cater when he graduated from Wartburg, played for Coach Levick, who the gym's named after. So he played for Coach Levick at Wartburg, and then his first job was at Lone Tree. And then from Lone Tree, he went to Central El Cater, but he got to come home and coach at Mid Prairie. And so I was able to jump on his bench at a real young age, back in the 80s. And so Coach has always been my main guy. And when he and Jerry Slykow started Snow Valley, when they first started it, it was just Mid Prairie and Cedar Falls kids. Coach Slykow was a Hall of Fame coach from Cedar Falls High School in Iowa. And they had always been out to Snow Valley, California. And, so that's where it all started. And they brought the idea and they bought the rights from Coach Livesey to start an Iowa version of it. But when they first did it, I was a Division II coach, and you could not work those summer camps. It was, at that time, it was illegal, or we'd be out recruiting that I just couldn't get away. So probably the first 6 years, I couldn't work them. I could go watch and go see the players. But then after that, I was able to start working. At that time, we had two or three sessions, I guess, maybe at the first part of it, and I would work all of them. But then, it's just because I was, one of Coach's guys that he was always going to hire his guys. And once you start, you're in for life. I mean, once you get a taste of it, you're going to be a Snow Valley person forever.
So for people who maybe aren't familiar with it, just give us the 1 minute elevator pitch about what makes it such a special place, what makes it different from any other camp out there. And sell us on the value of Snow Valley. You obviously don't have to sell Jason and I, but sell the audience, sell the people who are our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with it, of what makes it such a special place.
Well, it's so unique, and the probably the first thing you look at is, you're on the floor at 6:15 in the morning. You're going to have a clinic, and you can do some work before breakfast. Go to breakfast at 7:15, 7:30. Back in the gym at 8:30, and you go to about noon, and off till about 1:15. Then you're back in there till about 4:30, 5 o'clock. Go eat dinner. Back in there again at 6:15 until about 10, 11 o'clock at night. But during all that long day, as a camper, you're only going to play one game, and it's going to be a full game, and it's going to be in the evening. It's the last thing you do. There's usually three rounds of games. So, you know, 90% of the time you're at Snow Valley, you're in skill development, just basketball. It's all layered. And so the instruction just stacks on top of what was just taught. And so you're getting more instruction in the 4 days of camp than I would guess probably at any other camp in the country. I don't know of anybody else that probably would give you as much as what we do on that end. We get kids from all over. And I think the unique thing about Snow Valley is we had just that 1500 kids this summer. And, you know, a lot of them are just there because, you know what, when they're a junior, they might have been the 12th guy on the team. And, you know, when they're a senior, they just want to be in the rotation. And we don't get a ton of like all the AU guys because they're out playing. But we still do get some high-end players. But to go to Snow Valley, you got to love basketball, whether it be a coach or a camp kid. You really got to love basketball because you're going to be in there all day. And in turn, the magic to the whole deal is the coaches that we have work for us. They're just the most incredible group of people. And I mean, if you talked, and you've had a ton of them on with your podcast, I've listened to all of them, and I can't even think who you all have. You've had a ton of our guys on there. But if you're talking to a Nick Lagalbo, or if you're talking to a Greg White or a Jacob Brindle or you know, a Jamie Smith, whoever you might be talking to, a Nick Schaaf, they're going to come across like they own Snow Valley, because once you're a part of it, you feel like you own it. So it's not like you would never shortchange the day if you're a coach there. You would never shortchange a kid. You work so hard because you believe you're not just an employee. You feel like it's part of your deal, like that you own part of it. And I think just that loyalty that we get from the staff, and I think you got to flip it right back. It's because the loyalty you get from Don Showalter is just so incredible that it becomes a special place. And we would never talk about Snow Valley without mentioning Jerry Slykhouse. It'll be 3 years, December 20th. It'll be 3 years that him and his wife got in a terrible car accident in Kansas, going to heading to Arizona for the winter, and they were both tragically killed in the car accident. And Coach Slykhouse was one of the most genuine, great guys you could ever be around, and I consider, you know, just one of the great mentors that I've been lucky enough to have. And so we lost Mr. Snow Valley, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he was all about it. He did all, you know, he did the stretching and did all that stuff, all the behind the scenes stuff. And he and Coach Showalter just made the perfect pair. And so we miss Slyke for sure. And everybody works harder now because it's like you wouldn't want to let Jerry down. And unless you go experience it, it's kind of hard to explain sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. I think the biggest thing that you just said there, which to me is the key, it's the people. And I know from running camps myself for years and years, you know, how important all the things that go on behind the scenes and the execution and making sure that it's all running smoothly. And that's obviously very, very important. But really what it comes down to is the quality of your people. And I know that when we went there, you know, we obviously had some experience and had gotten a chance to know Greg and Nick and Marshall and Nick Schaaf and everybody that is a part of, you know, the family. And obviously Coach Showalter has been tremendous to us as a part of the podcast. And there's been nobody that's been more, as you said, you know, he's so loyal and dedicated to, you know, the people who have been a part of it. And even before we were a part of Snow Valley, just as, you know, from coming on the podcast, he's been nothing but supportive of everything that we've tried to do. And You know, every time I have an interaction with him, I I probably go over the top with the thank yous, with how nice he's been to us. But to me, it's always about the people and the quality of the people that we were able to come in contact with at Snow Valley. You know, every coach just was there for the right reasons. Every coach was there not to have their name associated with Snow Valley, not for any ego purposes, but just for the opportunity to be around other great coaches, to be in an environment where it felt very pure from a basketball standpoint. You're there, you're teaching, you're coaching, you have your team, you're working with them. You have kids who, you know, as you said, you know, you had a variety of different levels. You know, you had kids who were probably going to go on and play Division I college basketball, and then you had some kids who might struggle to make a team, you know, in their next school season. And yet every single one of them was there up in the morning at 6:15, ready to go, working on their game. And I told Greg when we had our little wrap-up show after we got back from Iowa that for me, I had the perspective, I got to experience the camp from three perspectives. So one, I got to experience it as a coach and just the opportunity to be able to observe other great coaches and some of the drills and things that they put together when you had the master clinician come out and demonstrate the drills and then break everybody up. There's nothing better from a coaching standpoint. I felt like I was able to grow and learn from the other great people that were around, and plus the conversations that you get to have. So that was number one. Number two, my son also attended the camp, so I got to be there as a parent of a camper and see what went on. And I think if I'm a parent of a camper who attends Snow Valley, I feel great about what my kid gets out of it. And everybody who's there is coaching their brains out to try to help your kid get better. And then I got the experience to come back and talk to my son about what his experience was like as a player. And I bet, honestly, Dave, there isn't a day that goes by that my son doesn't say, "Dad, we're going to go back to Iowa next year, right? We're going to go back there again, aren't we?" And so there's no, and my son honestly is, you know, you describe kids who love basketball. My son, I don't know if I'd say he loves basketball. He loves people and he likes basketball, but he loved Snow Valley. He loved it. And like I said, every day he talks to me about, "Hey, are we going to go back to Iowa? I really want to go back there. I had so much fun. It was so, you know, it was such a good experience." So from all three of those perspectives, there's been nothing better. And so you guys are doing it right. And for anybody who's out there, whether you're a coach, and if you ever have an opportunity to be fortunate enough to come out and work one of the weeks or one of the sessions, highly recommended it. And then if you're the parent of a player or you're a player yourself, there's no better place to come out and have four great days of basketball. And you guys, again, are doing a great job, Dave. It's just been tremendous.
It's such a good group. And you know, when we lost Coach Slykhouse, you know, we knew we had to pick up all the things that he did. And I'm going to say that I'm very fortunate that Coach Showalter is giving me what in theory was Coach Slykhouse's role. It keeps me super busy. I don't really get a coach anymore when I'm there. I'm doing everything else. But we've got Chris Kern and Kenny Spielbauer that are there. They've worked every camp in the 25 years, and they have the youngest kids. And there is nobody in the country better than Chris and Kenny when it comes to working with young kids. And Dick Pate, the head coach at Wartburg, has the older kids. And you know, Tate's Lock is, you know, he's the best. You know, and Coach Locke's like you know, he's like another father to me in a lot of ways. And he's like a grandpa to my boys and my kids. I know that for sure. And then you got Coach Showalter, just, you know, the guy that's behind it all. But then all the different people, you know, the Matt Kings, you know, Matt does a lot for us. You know, we get Dave Bullwinkle, you know, the NBA guys that come, Mike Copio and Dave Severns. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And some of the greatest coaches are the high school guys like Jacob Brindle from Cascade. I mean, there's just so many, and I'm missing 100 names, you know, but it's just such a great crew from all over the world that come in, and it's a great place to, it's like a coaching academy. The coaches leave with just as much as the kids do. And relationships you make. It's just amazing how everybody will stay in touch. It makes it really fun.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about what you do. So give us an idea of maybe what you do in terms of the prep work for it, and then what you do during the actual weeks while the camp is going on. Because you're, as you said, once you kind of go into that administrative role, you take yourself off of the actual basketball coaching floor, but there's a ton of things going on behind the scenes. So just kind of give us an idea of what your role is, what you do day to day to help make Snow Valley the kind of place that it is. Because I, you know, obviously you're deflecting a lot of credit, but I think what you do to help make it a special place is important. So let's talk a little bit about what you do day to day to help make it such a great place for basketball.
Well, it's kind of funny that Coach Showalter always laughs that he and Jerry were so super close, but Jerry didn't know what Don did all the time, and Coach Show didn't know what Slyke did all the time. Show would do most of, like, get the coaches there, you know, do the invites for the coaches, organize the clinics. Jerry would, you know, Coach Slykos would do the housing, the security, the food service, the coaches flying in, picking them up at the airports, moms calling the kids homesick. So I do all that. The camp store, you know, ordering all the shirts and making sure you don't order too much of anything, and just keeping track of the coaches. You know, Coach Walter's so busy with USA Basketball that he isn't always. It's hard to track him down sometimes because he's just all over the world with basketball. So I think a lot of the coaches throughout the year know that they could probably, if they need something, they can usually catch me, and then I can get with Coach Showalter as needed. And so I do a lot of that stuff just throughout the year. And just Dick Paith and I have worked really hard to build the schedule, to make the continuity of it a little bit. We've kind of changed some things on that with Show's blessing. And so it's just getting there and making sure everybody's getting woke up in the morning and being where they're supposed to be, and things are getting printed. You know, we're not short of score sheets or whatever it might be, or, you know, we don't get a lot of homesick kids, but we do get some of that. Or I get to do the good things middle of the night. If someone gets sick, I'm up, you know, that's my job. So I do a little bit of everything, but the thing I like about it is I can walk around, you know, when everybody's in doing the clinics. And if I don't have other things to do, I get to spend a lot of time just going through the whole building, just talking with coaches and just get to spend a lot of time and getting to know them, you know, a little bit better. And you just develop some super friendships. And it's a good way to feel like you maybe have you can mentor some people, but then also there's some people there that you feel like you're getting some mentoring back towards you as well. And so it's a win-win definitely during a week. But it does keep me pretty busy. There's always something going on. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. How soon after your camp season ends, how soon do you start working on the following year? I would imagine it's almost immediately. Talk a little bit about what you do kind of at, you know, at the end of the summer, once the sessions are over for the summer and you're looking ahead to the next summer. What are some things that you start to get in place right away to make sure that things are going to go smoothly as you head into the following summer's camps?
Well, we're just wrapping it up, which it sounds kind of crazy, but it's wrapped up now. It's pretty much everything for the 2019 camps. Probably end of last week is now everything should be tidied up, you know, as far as, you know, figuring out all the expenses and things like that, or just everything, the bookkeeping part of it, whatever information that Wartburg would need or you know, Coach Show needs. So I think we've got that. So, but it takes about a good month after the camp, month and a half, to get that to where it's done. And now we're working on next year. I just was working with Coach Showalter this week on a master list of all the coaches that we had worked for us last year. It was over 200 coaches. So we've got to go through that. And Snow Valley isn't for everyone either, because you do, you know, some people, it's not like a camp. Like, you might go to a Division I camp and you might get to go golf in the afternoon or work 3 hours and take off or whatever. If you're a coach there, you're grinding the whole time. And so it isn't for everybody. And so we've got to determine, because we've got a big waiting list of people that want to work for us, that Do we need to make some changes? And not everybody gets invited back. I mean, I'm not sure that's something we talk about too much, but it's reality. So we'll go through our coaching list here in the next couple, 3 weeks, while it's still fresh in our minds. And there isn't a ton because 98% of everybody we have come in does an awesome job. But every now and then it's just, maybe it's just not a fit. So we've got to make those decisions so we don't probably have invitations out. And that would also allow some new people to come in every year to work because there's a lot of people we can't. Coach Walter can't say yes to everybody because he wouldn't be able to hire that many people because the list is always bigger than what we have spots for.
How long is the waiting list?
Well, I don't know if you can put just like a time on it, but I'm sure he'll probably have 50, 75 coaches that inquire that he said he might have to tell them, I don't know if we have a spot this year, but we'll put you on the list, try to get you in the next year or so. It might take someone a couple of years till they finally have a spot open for him. And because most people want to keep coming back. I mean, Tony Sterling told you that. Tony'd come every week. And so you just got to – and so part of it, I think, this year is we had Coach Show had to go and just make sure – because it's a tough 3 weeks if you do three in a row or four in a row. We don't have too many people do that many. We used to, and it was almost too much. So maybe – keeping people to a couple weeks now instead of three or four has been better too. And then that allows more people to get an opportunity to come in and experience it as well.
Absolutely. Have you guys thought at all ever about taking it to a new location?
We've done some shooting camps in the past. In fact, I did a ton of them and Coach Slykhouse ended up jumping in with us and helping me on that. And we probably ran about 800 kids the 1 year just doing shooting camps. And we were like a traveling road show. We went, Jamie Smith went with me just about to every one of them. And Coach Slykhouse started going with us to most of them. And we had probably as fun a time as I've ever had coaching. And then I've gotten just a little too busy with taking the head job that we've kind of got away from the shooting camps, but we'd like to kind of branch out and start doing that. So if anybody would like Snow Valley to come out, we can tailor any sort of camp at your facility, whether it be a 2 or 3 day weekend thing. We just can't do it obviously when ours are going on in June and July, but we would love to come and run some satellite Snow Valley camps across the country. We would welcome that. So anybody, I'm easy to get a hold of, just if you have to just go to the Cornell men's basketball website and my cell phone's right on my bio. And that's the easiest way to get a hold of me. And we would love to. And we've got enough coaches throughout the country that it wouldn't take us. It wouldn't be too much work for us to put together a small staff to go to run a 1 day or a 2 day camp in the fall or in the spring.
Yeah, I love that idea. I think it's great. I think if you could take all the great things that, you guys do there in Iowa, that if you could take that and expand it and get that message to in front of more people, and the quality of the coaching staff is what it's really all about that makes all the difference. And I think that, again, we feel, Jason and I feel very privileged that we got the opportunity to come out and be a part of it. And as I've mentioned numerous times and said tonight, it was just it was just a very unique opportunity, and I came away so impressed with just the organization. As somebody who's run camps for 25 or so years, I know that to manage 400 kids and to make it run smoothly and to make it go the way that you guys made it go, that doesn't happen without a huge amount of planning and forethought into how you staff it, how you organize it, how you logistically move kids from one place to another, how you set up your drills and clinics and things so that you're maximizing the amount of time that you have on the court and you're still building in time for the kids to get a little bit of a rest without maybe even knowing that they're resting. That stuff doesn't happen by accident, and it happens through hard work and preparation. And again, I just think that you guys have done a tremendous job with that. And it still comes down to the people, and the people make it what it is. And you and Coach Show and everybody else that we've already mentioned, just make Snow Valley what it is. It's such a special place. We're coming up, Dave, close to an hour and a half here. So I know you just mentioned how people can get in touch with you, but maybe if you just repeat your contact information for us. And then if there's anything that we didn't touch on tonight, maybe you want to make one final statement out to our audience. You can go ahead and do that as well. And then we'll come back and wrap up the episode.
That'd be great. Now I'm real easy to catch. And again, if you go to Cornell College men's basketball website, it's real easy to just go to my bio and I list my cell phone right there and email address would also be on there. So I'm really easy to catch. And so, yeah, we look forward to visiting with more people. You know, I think one thing that I always like to try to bring up, if you've got a son or a daughter that younger, you know, they're fifth grade, sixth grade, and they kind of like basketball, but they, you know, they just need to maybe get an experience to expose them to a little bit more basketball. I think sending a young kid to Snow Valley and letting Coach Kern and Spielbauer have them for a week, they have so much fun with those kids, teaching them basketball. And I think you can get a kid hooked on the game if you let those guys have them for a week. And so if you got a son or daughter that you just want to see if you can get them a little bit more interested in it, and there's going to be skill levels from across the board, so they'll fit in at whatever level they're at, and there's a place for them. And I think getting them in at a young age at something like Snow Valley is a good way to get young people hooked on the game. And I think, like I said, Ken and Chris do an unbelievable job, and I can't say enough about, you know, putting the young kids in there at an early age. Don't be scared that you got to wait till their high school age. I think getting them in the earlier, the better.
Couldn't agree more. I think it's a great place for especially those young kids, as you said, to get some experience with A, great coaches, B, just the level of activity, the amount of fun that they're going to have, the opportunity to meet new kids. As I mentioned with my son earlier, he came home with, you know, a bunch of new friends, roommates. He's like, oh, if we go next year, I got to make sure I, you know, stay in contact with so-and-so and I want to room with him again. And, you know, those are things that are just, again, beyond basketball, that are life-changing events. And as you said, I think if you can get a kid hooked on the game early, then they have a chance to really get those positive experiences out of the game. No matter what level they end up playing at, I think that basketball does a great job of creating better citizens and better people. And I think that's really what those of us in the coaching profession, that's really what it's all about. So, Dave, we can't thank you enough for spending an hour and a half with us tonight. It was really great of you to give us that time, and we truly appreciate it. We appreciate the opportunity to come out and work at Snow Valley. We're looking forward to coming back out to Iowa again next summer. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoop Heads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball. We'll be right back.